RTE reporter and digital technician and cameraman and multitasker Colm Flynn is with me now. And Colm has just recently returned from South Africa, where he has been making a documentary about a group of Irish volunteers who are building an extension to a school in a place called Missionville. Colm, the documentary was the essential purpose of your visit, but you've come back with some very vivid memories and experiences. First of all, tell us a bit about how did this trip come about for you?
Okay, and Angus, thanks for that introduction as well. You read my script perfectly there. Well, last year I was out in Ecuador in South America, and I was doing a video about an Irish priest from Ennis, Father John Malloy, who works in a community out there. So long story short, we made the documentary. It was quite successful and we launched it. And this group called Missionville Ireland, they're a charity group who go over to a place called Missionville in South Africa, just outside Port Elizabeth. They came to me and said, will you come out and cover the story of a group of volunteers that are going out, because that's what it was. Irish volunteers were going out to build classrooms onto a school that's there in the community already. And they also wanted me to document Sister Eleanor Moyle. And she's from my home county, County Clare. From County Clare, the Banner County, from a place called Lizzie Casey. And she's been out there since 1988. She started with nothing and she's built this marvellous care centre. So that's what I was there to do.
And what's the situation like now? I mean, she's been there for a long number of years. She's been working, trying to improve the lot of the gang that are there. Has it improved much? What did you see when you arrived?
Well, I suppose I'll tell you about the area. I don't know if you know South Africa.
I've only been once. I didn't particularly enjoy it. I felt a little bit scared.
Really?
And yeah. I found it hard to take the opulence on the one side of the street, you know, five-star hotels, and literally shantytown on the other side. And I certainly didn't feel that I was safe at any time.
It's funny you say that, because before I went out, people said, be very careful, Cape Town, so dangerous. Now, Johannesburg, we just flew into, but Port Elizabeth, they said, oh, be very careful, have your wits about you. I didn't really feel threatened at any stage. But anyway, that's another thing. We were staying in Port Elizabeth, and just outside Port Elizabeth, like literally right outside the city, is a place called Missionville. And it's a community of around 120,000 people. And you should see what they live in. If we put a dog into one of their houses here, there would be uproar. They live in these little shacks. I keep saying homes and houses, but when you
think... It's corrugated iron. You know the roofs that you would have seen, three or four of those and held up with a pallet and appalling
bits
conditions.
Of wood, scrap metal put together to make a home. And like you said, it's amazing because the rich and the poor, like the extremely wealthy and the extremely poor, they live side by side. You look one way and you see a mansion with a pool, Mercedes-Benz in the garden, you turn your head and there they are living in their shacks, not educated, dying of diseases and so on. So that's what it was like. That's where our minibus pulled up every morning. We went to work there and they were building on to the school, like I said. So over the 2 weeks, I walked around the area. I got talking to people that work there in the community that helped the people of Missionville. And I talked to the locals as well. And I got to kind of an idea of some of the problems that they have there in Missionville, of which there are many.
Well, one of the biggest is the problem with AIDS. And it's funny, in the West, we seem to have more or less sorted it out in a sense, in that I remember Orla Hardiman on that fantastic documentary about Colm Murray, where she said, you know, 30 years ago, when she started her practice as a neurologist, that if people got AIDS, they died. And now people have the same life expectancy. And she said that in her lifetime, she hopes to see the same results for motor neuron disease. But the AIDS epidemic, and it really is an epidemic of huge proportion.
Pandemic, yeah. I know, and it's the one thing, talking to Sister Ethel, we did a great interview for the documentary. It lasted around 2 hours and she was in tears and I was in tears for most of it. And she was talking about all the different things they've been tackling. The poverty, of course, is a massive thing. The education, they're building the school. And then I was saying, what's any regrets? And then she said, looking back on nearly 25 years, quarter of a century there, she said the AIDS, the problem of HIV and AIDS, and she described it as a monster. No matter what they do, they can't get ahead of it. And they've tried everything under the sun. They just cannot, you know, that's the million-dollar question. You know, how do you solve it?
And how do you solve it? I mean, because it seems to me that the huge lack of education there. In the West, it was seemed to be a homosexual disease. Mm-hmm. And yet people didn't realise that the biggest spread of the disease is through the heterosexual community.
Exactly, yeah. And over there, yeah, it's not a homosexual disease, really. They see it as, of course, people that are being promiscuous, people that are being unfaithful to their partners. Everyone I spoke to, every man had six or seven girlfriends. It was hilarious. And we would interview these guys in the street. And at first I thought they were being macho in front of the camera. And I'd ask these young lads, have you a girlfriend? And they'd say, oh, I've five or I've six. And then I met the local Christian bishop and he was on his sixth wife. So it just shows you that kind of culture doesn't help in the spread of the virus of HIV. And then the other thing is, of course, they're not educated. They don't even know how you get HIV or AIDS. They think that you can pick it up through the air. If someone spits in you, you can get it. And all these old beliefs of black magic and voodoo, they still lie there today. And I remember Sister Ethel telling me as well that when she first arrived, she would get to know a family and they'd be living in their little hut. And then somebody would be infected, would become infected with HIV in the hut. So they didn't know exactly at the time what it was, but they knew that they had this black magic curse. And when she would come back a week later, neighbouring huts had all been cleared. The neighbours were moving away because they think there's a spell cast on the family for some wrongdoing in the past or something like that. And you'd be surprised that a lot of that is still there today.
And one of the worst stories that I've heard with regard to this is the perception that there's a way of curing it, which is...
I don't know a nice way of putting it, but the men believe that if you contract HIV, you can get rid of it by passing it on to a virgin. So what would happen in the nurses that work in the care centre now that Sister Ethel set up, they have to watch very carefully men coming into the community from other areas. They just arrive out of nowhere.
And they would prey on particularly young girls, which I know this is horrific for this time of the afternoon, mm-hmm. but it's a practical reality of what is actually happening
out there.
And
they actually believe it. And they come in from the cities. They realise they're sick in the cities. And to go under the radar to do this and hopefully get away with it, they come out to these communities where a lot of people are unregistered. Things just work totally differently. And they spend a few weeks there and they look for a virgin. She could be 18, 19. She could be a lot younger. I know. And how do you change that way of thinking?
And how do you convict or how do you prosecute the perpetrators, which is almost impossible to do. Listen, I want to come back to this afternoon, but we've got to take a break now. Well, as I mentioned before the news, Colin Flynn is here with me. He's just back from South Africa, where he was making a documentary in a place called Missionville. And we were talking about the myths surrounding how people could get rid of AIDS and the ignorance and the lack of education in that whole area there. And there are some frightening statistics, I believe, Colin, on about the spread of AIDS and how they've managed to be tackling it, or not indeed, over the last, 10 years?
Well, they're doing their best to try and tackle it. And that's the thing, the worrying thing, it seems to have done... not very little, but the statistics are, in 2001, 24.8% of the entire population were estimated to have HIV or AIDS in South Africa. Now, I only have statistics up until 2010, and the figure was 30.2, so quite a growth. And they're from the Department of Health in South Africa. And it's the same in Missionville. Sister Ethel was saying when she first came in 1988, she saw the horrific problem and had these dreams to set up a care centre. The care centre, you can go in, you can get treatment for free. They've all the best antiretroviral drugs. Mm-hmm. You can get condoms. They educate you about it. And they set up that care centre and the Irish helped build it. And yet the problem is still there. So we talked about some of the reasons why, the myths and so on. But the biggest thing is the stigmas that are still around it. And like you have in the Western world here today, I mean, you wouldn't find someone singing from the rooftops about it. They're so ashamed of it. And it's seen as such an unclean disease that the men, of course, know that they're known to be sleeping around then. And when I went around interviewing people in their huts, and this is for 2.5 weeks in the community, the guys on the street, like I said, and they were open to talk about anything. And they would talk about the problems of crime, tackling that. Gangsters were talking to me about getting guns and how they would go up to people with a knife and try and get their money off them. And one man in a hut, he got very emotional and he was saying how he drinks way too much. He was an alcoholic because he's no work. Everyone's unemployed there. No one has any work. And he talks so openly about that and the fact that two children are gone as well and he doesn't know where they are. But once I asked him about the problem with HIV in the area, in the community, he shifts nervously in the seat and his wife, who's off camera in the corner, starts saying something in Afrikaans, their local language. And you can take a listen to the clip. They were so uncomfortable when I asked the question.
No, I don't know about that. Really, no. HIV and that things, I don't know about it. Yeah, inside, no.
What is she saying?
She laugh for you because why you talking about HIV? Because she know we too haven't got HIV.
No, I know. I don't think you do.
Yes.
No.
Now she laugh for that HIV.
Well, a lot of people here do have it.
I don't know. You must ask it. You was here, but it's that house.
Why, do they have someone in there?
Yeah, the back man.
No, sorry, I don't mean to offend you. I don't think that you...
Yes, okay, you have to ask. That is a very bad thing, really. I don't want that thing.
Indeed, clearly I don't want that thing. You also went to visit a school because presumably, whatever about the older generation, if you can properly educate the new young generation coming through and give them some sense of social responsibility and you know, with all the education there, it could make a difference. How did you get on?
So that's their big thing, education, and starting off at a young age. So they come into the school, they've built a school there now. Currently it's up and they can, in our terms, the children can go up until third class. But now with the Irish, when they were over there for the last couple of weeks, they've built six new classrooms, which means the children will be able to finish their primary school education, and also I heard plans of a secondary school that's going to be built in the area as well in the future. So I mean, it's fantastic. They teach the kids in the school how you actually get HIV, how you can prevent it, and the girls as well. You know, it's okay to say no. They're allowed to abstain if they want, because that's a big thing over there. The girls have no choice. So I spoke to the principal of the school as well, and he was telling me about it.
We have a few kids. I think we know about 12 kids who are HIV positive. But I'm sure if we test them all, there'll be many more. And at the moment in South Africa, your greatest weapon against HIV is good nutrition. And so our children over here, last year, we started a pilot project where we give them a nutritional meal, a porridge, early in the morning before they start school. At 8 o'clock, they get a nutritious porridge. And we feed them that meal. And we've seen a radical change. Radical transformation. The kids are healthier. The kids are more alive in the class. Because if you can't learn on an empty stomach. You can't learn if you're hungry. So in the morning, first thing, they get fed a nutritious meal. And it's the greatest weapon against HIV and AIDS.
That's an amazing sentence.
I know, it's, and I know that some people are taking exceptions to that, but I just want to explain. Yeah, of course, he knows that they get the medication. The healthcare centre is right next door. Now, most of the kids that are HIV positive don't get treatment. And again, because of the stigma, the parents don't tell the teachers or the school that they have HIV because they're ashamed of it. A lot of the people don't know because they haven't got them tested, but statistics show that most children in the class, and they're beautiful kids sitting there, have HIV. They might not make it to 18 years of age. And when they
make not to 18,
they might not make it to 18 years of age. So the ones that do get the medication, they need the other thing they need to get them, make sure that they take it regularly, that the parents will make sure they take it, that they don't drink, and as well that they get good nutritious food. And that's what he was saying in the clip. The school give them porridge in the morning, soup and sandwiches in the afternoon every day. They don't get that at home.
It makes a huge difference. Now, where are we going to see this documentary, by the way?
The documentary has been produced for a DVD for the charity Mission Vale. There are pieces being made for television here in RT as well.
Great.
And you'll see them over the next couple of months. No dates in stone yet, but on children's television and elsewhere.
Well, I presume, obviously, you got to talk to the woman from your own county at some stage, Sister Ethel, who's been the driving force out there.
Myself and Sister Ethel sat down. I didn't
talked about the home, the Banner County and the home place.
And she still wants to come home. The home is still longing, yeah. I mean, she's been out there for a large part of her life. She was on other missions before she went to Mission Vale, and she still longs for home. And she loves it when the Irish come over. Her eyes light up, and she's been texting us ever since. We'll be back out there again. We've no choice.
And you spoke to her?
I spoke to her, and again, we're going to hear an extract from the documentary. We spoke about a lot of different things, but one of the big things that kept coming up was her disappointment that they can't tackle the monster, as she calls it, that is HIV and AIDS.
I was younger at that time, and more sprightly, and I had a few skip ropes, and I had copy books and crayons, and I taught them, you know, the bare mathematics. And I remember one little girl writing her name one day, and she said, "My name is Mariska, and I am beautiful." It was lovely, you know, and she spelt beautiful correctly. She has since died. She was beautiful. I was with her when she died.
What age was she?
18. It's this monster of TB and AIDS, and we can't get ahead of it. I would put all my heart and hopes into the school. We will, out of that school will come a new generation, an educated people. These people, the people at the moment, they were deprived of education. But, like, you know, when you see now, as we're experiencing this week and last week, people coming over from Ireland. I couldn't be here only for my own congregation, the little company of Mary, but my own people, you know, they have just been so wonderful. what would I do without Mission Vale Ireland? I mean, Colm, really, what would I do? You know, I'm only one person here, you know, and I am scared of that monster. You know, he's literally eating us up here. And again, I would put all my faith and trust in that school over there, that out of it will come the doctors, the visionaries. They can have whatever profession they like or they want, but if they're not visionaries, they will be nothing.